will be made to, hopefully, I think from the Congress's perspective, benefit the Native people that the original act was intended to do. A prime example is the 1879 Dawes Act, which in fact gave 160 acres and a mule to each Indian across the country. At that particular point, the newly formed Bureau of Indian Affairs identified that there were approximately 150 million acres of land in American Indian ownership. This excludes Alaska. After a mere 50 years, the loss of lands by American Indians dropped from 150 million acres to approximately 53 million acres in that short period of time. The policy of the Dawes Act simply said, what we are going to do is make regular citizens of American Indians, and the way to do it in 1887 was to make farmers out of them, because then the growing United States was coming out of an agrarian society. Small farms dotted the whole countryside, and in many states across the country you find a checkerboard pattern of Indian, non-Indian ownership of land. This attempt by the federal government to change what basically were identifiable political, cultural, social groups, Indians across the country, to try to change them into regular Americans, I think failed miserably on several grounds. One, the loss of land can be documented, is documented. I've forgotten the name of the book. It's the author's last name is Priest, but he documents that quite clearly. To try to correct that, in 1934, Congress then passed the Indian Reorganization Act, which put a stop to the allotment procedures, which put a stop basically to the Indians in the lower 48 basically losing their lands. At that particular time, there were a bunch of different land claims, litigation going on in Southeast Alaska concerning the Tlingits and Haidas, and that is a history in itself that you might want to look at in terms of how they fit into the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. How the Indian Reorganization Act affected Alaska were through amendments in 1936 to apply to Alaska where Alaska Natives could apply for allotments. And the allotment claims prior to December 18th, 1971 are obviously based on that, and because of the act having passed on that particular date, allotments were no longer given to Alaska Natives. How the U.S. Congress chooses to rectify some of the problems that Alaska Natives point to, presumably this commission has listened to a lot of problems pointed out by a lot of people concerning a whole variety of issues. I've sat through enough of the commission's hearings to know that there are specific problems with land transfers, land ownership, title ownership, transfer of shares. Basically, those problems that one finds in any other American or Alaskan corporation. And Congress's intent in 1971 was in fact to do that, not to set up a special class of people in perpetuity, but simply to create another mechanism to change, in this case, Alaska Natives to modern Americans. And the mechanism in 1971, and I think still continues today, is the corporation model, basically changing all of the Alaska Natives into shareholders. And whoever made the decision at the time to cut off the filing deadline for our children to become shareholders, I don't know who did that. And I think, personally, what I would like to see is each Native individual born become a shareholder in his mother or her mother's corporation, a full-fledged shareholder. That, from my perspective, is one way of totally protecting the corporation and the shares. On the other side of the coin on that argument, you hear from especially Anchorage natives, and this came directly from a former legislator from Anchorage who is enrolled in the Cook Inlet Regional Corporation. His argument was that he couldn't sell his corporation stocks now. As a matter of fact, he wanted to do that and was not able to do that, and he had a whole list of complaints about that. He said he had no desire to be in a regional or village corporation and thus wanted to sell his shares. The Act, as you know, does not allow for that, at least legally. And whenever I heard those arguments, my personal response to him is, well, you had a choice of not joining in the settlement. If in fact you did that, why are you not following the rules? Because the rules were set in 1971 with subsequent amendments to clarify some land transfer problems, some transportation problems. And those are basically, again, problems that any corporation faces. And the point behind my saying that is that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act set up regional corporations, village corporations, and made individuals shareholders, but not any different except for the initial signing up with corporations. That was the only difference with these corporations as they are set up. Presumably, Congress will try to deal with the problems that are mentioned to you, and I'm sure that you've heard everything from bringing back or allowing Alaska Natives to have fishing permits to allowing the children born after 1971 to become direct participants in the corporations. But if you look at the socioeconomic status of Alaska Natives, which I think is one of your charges, and you analyze the benefits of the regional corporations, the village corporations, you'll find that it's all over the board, and it varies from one village corporation to the next, as well as one regional corporation to the next, which points out the fact that who, in fact, is taking care of the Alaska Natives and who, in fact, is responsible. There's a large and, I think, growing element in the Alaska Native community which seeks to be its own deliverer of services, seek its own determination, and do that within the frameworks of both the state and federal constitutions. To my knowledge, that has only been done very limitedly across the lower 48. And even as the Alaska Native community creates or attempts to create a form of self-determination in whatever area they choose, whether it's delivery of social services programs or whether it's in the areas of making a go of a successful regional corporation or a village corporation, the models chosen are the models that are offered by the corporate world of the Western world. Given those models, it seems to me that the corporate modern world does not take care of people per se. It pays them money if, in fact, it turns a profit on its investments. I dare say that in the last 15 years, I've made more money off of investments in other corporations than I have either from the Jalista Corporation or the Kuskokwim Corporation, which I'm a member of both. But if you look at the perceptions of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, not only by the public in general, but also the perceptions by the Alaska Native people in the villages, you get a perception that what in fact was intended by Congress in 1971 was to take care of not only the land settlement by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, but also all the other social problems and costs that the people in the villages have to bear from year to year. I don't know how much money the state of Alaska has given to Alaska Natives in one form or another, but it's considerably more than what the $962.5 million Settlement Act did initially. The state of Alaska provides education, health and social services programs and projects. The state of Alaska provides for capital improvement projects in the communities. And the importance of the state has been growing in recent years, especially the last 4 years since the Reagan administration has been in power. And from my perspective, I can only say that the Alaska Natives in general and the state of Alaska will have to ride out the Reagan administration. If you look at the proposed cuts by the Reagan administration, it hurts Alaska a lot because the federal government has given a lot of social services programs and projects in the state of Alaska. And David Stockman and President Reagan are in the process of cutting that back. And it seems to me, and from what I know of other Indian groups across the country, that attitude is continuing. But Native Americans as a whole in the history of the United States have flowed with the ebb and flow of how the federal Congress feels at any particular period. And I think that even if the corporations are lost, even if the shareholders lose their stocks, the people will still be in the villages for the reason that the villages exist where they do. And given that, it's up to the state of Alaska as well as the federal government in the future to take care of those Alaska Natives. What has been left unsaid in the whole process is the federal government's special relationship with Alaska Natives. I know that several people in several articles have talked about that responsibility, but it's not clearly identified. It's not clear to Alaska Natives what that responsibility is. Here in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, the federal presence is still very much here. A prime example of that is the hospital sitting here. It's totally federally operated unless the state gives some money to it. That presence will continue to exist, I think, not only here, but in the state of Alaska. How the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act fits into that, I think, is probably a separate issue completely. And given the charge that you have from the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, I don't know what recommendations you will make to the ICC, nor do I know what effects that will have either on the federal government's relationship with Alaska Natives or those specific programs that affect the day-to-day lives of Alaska Natives. And I suspect that given the documentation you have, it's my hope at least that you share your information with the 1985 report on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act that the Department of the Interior is responsible for. But I don't see the federal relationship with Alaska Natives, whether it's with the corporations or not, ending in 1991. I think we may see very different legal relationships as far as the corporate structures are concerned. And I think your answer to a previous speaker on the difficulty of a regional or village corporation to match the buying power of a multinational, much less simply a large domestic corporation, will put a lot of strain on either the regional or the village corporations. And I think probably what should happen is Congress extend a special protection to those regional and village corporations that doesn't allow non-natives to be able to buy corporate stocks or shares.
Just a question, Mr. Vasca, about that business of refusing to allow non-natives to buy shares. You know, as I go around the state, people are worried about the possibility that a few white people might wind up owning all this native land. Well, if you can only sell to natives and not to white people, there's a possibility that just a few native people might wind up owning all this native land. You know, that's something that shouldn't be dismissed as impossible. For instance, the idea that people would be able to sell, but only by selling back to their corporations, might mean that within a corporation you'd have a very limited body of shareholders, just a few people owning all the land, and the others having sold out. What do you think about that possibility? I mean, if a situation like that came about...
I mentioned the possibility also that the child born would become a shareholder in his or her mother's
automatically corporation.
Yes.
So that you'd have a continuing body of shareholders.
Yes.
And those children wouldn't pay for their shares.
Nope.
Okay. You know, when I was in Bristol Bay, a lot of people down there, in Dillingham anyway, not in the villages, said, hey, I don't want to see those children be given shares, because that dilutes the value of my shares. I've got these shares, and you start issuing more shares, well, these shares are worth less. So leave the children out of this. They can inherit shares, you know, when their parents die. Well, that's their answer to the kind of proposition you put forward. What would you say to that?
Well, there's another side of the coin as well. Because of the constraints on transfer of shares or stocks, who the act hurts the most are the elders who have since died since 1971, or those who may be before 1991. There wasn't a mechanism that gave them a direct benefit. Simply a couple pieces of paper saying you have 100 shares in each of the corporations that you belong to. My response to those people who value the shares, presumably a monetary value, from my perspective, and it's a personal perspective, for the protection of the Alaska Natives, that's fine with me. I mean, reducing the value of my shares of either Jalista Corporation or Kuskokwim Corporation is fine if, in fact, the Native community is benefiting.
Yeah. Anything else you wanted to? Well, thanks very much, Mr. Baskin.
Thank you.
You're probably tired of me, him and I've been traveling and testifying to me.
No, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on what Mr. Vasquez and Mr. Corby mentioned.
Well, this is your last chance.
This is my last chance. What Mr. Vasquez said is really right. If you look back what the federal government has tried to settle with the Alaska Natives or the Indians outside, has never worked. So in 1971, in their big wisdom, said, well, we'll settle with you for the amount of money, $1 billion, 44 million acres. But they made a mistake, in my mind. First one we identified already was 1971 kids born after. Right off, they cut those off. Then you go keep going, and only thing we got was 44 million acres. The state of Alaska is what? 365 million acres, we lost right off the bat. We didn't get what we got coming. We were indigenous people of the state of Alaska. Then you go to the 1991 problem. So really, and then they told us that we'd be corporations. You can no more be natives. We're going to put you in a Western society, make you guys all corporate officers like myself, you know. Big deal. We never been the corporation all our lives. We didn't even know what it was in 1971. We're doomed to failure, let me tell you. Because as a corporation, your assets can be attached by any court in the United States, if you owe debt. That's the first thing they'll do. I travel a lot in the state of Alaska and listen to people. And the people are telling us, at all costs, your land should be our land should be protected. How then we do that, you know? I think these hearings are what Mr. Berger is asking. How can we do that? Mr. Quagley mentioned IRAs. Government gave us authorities. Remember those? Now they don't abide by them. I think those that things have to be solved. That has to be solved. The question of sovereignty. We must deal with federal government and state of Alaska and iron out these things. I know Mr. Vasca sits on that. But we must deal with that. Let the federal government finally say, these are the regulations that we're going to handle you by. Our problem is we've never voiced our what we want in Alaska. Did we have a lot of say-so in 1971 when the Act became a being? We all say no. We didn't. We didn't. We were stuck with these corporations. Let me ask some of you, you know, we're pretty well corporate structure-wise upriver. Kuskokwim Corporation, $10 million in assets, cash asset, and a million acres. And look at Sea Alaska, Fortune 500, when, 2 years ago? Went down last year. So even if you made a lot of money, you'll never keep your land because there's a threat. There's a threat because of if you owe debt, what are they going to attach first? Right now, they'll attach that land very quickly. So there must be some way to change this thing, you know? We as natives ought to know what the best way to do it. And I think we made a mistake again when the state of Alaska became a state from territorial days. We should have put in the constitution of the state that Alaska Natives would have the preference to subsistence. It isn't there. Protection of other things that we are guaranteed. In the United States Constitution it should have been said those things. Because people in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, they're coming in, they're going to outvote us. Remember this, they're going to outvote us in subsistence. Remember 2 years ago, we barely beat it? This time, there's thousands of people are coming in. They don't have any idea that Bethel exists. So I think it's about time as we as natives sit down somewhere in a table and deal with what Mr. Quagley just said. Is those rights we already have? Let the federal government say to us, either way, are those laws any good, or are they put aside? Seem like they put them aside and make another law. There must be some way out there, mechanically, through something that we can separate. In my mind, separate that land, and that's what the people are saying to us. To save that land. Somehow, somebody out there with all these legal minds must be something out there. As far as the 71 kids, they ought to be enrolled. They are natives. We got to first answer that in ourselves. Are we natives? Why would I deny my kid that's native? Because some say we're going to dilute my share. If he's a native, he's a native, you know? So I dilute my share. Or do we want to forget them, you know? We're just like the federal government if we did that. Yes, there should be changes in the Act, but there should be more drastic changes. Because even down the line as corporate structures, remember this, if we made $100 million, we can also lose $100 million, and then you're going to lose your land eventually. Education, what Mr. Quagley said, is very vital to the natives. We need education before we get to be big corporate officers, you know. We got to know the system, in my mind. But the Alaska Native Claims Act was doomed for failure. I don't care how many businesses, and I sit on Salista Corporation Board, and you guys know out there, how many millions did we spend on Settlers Bay to this day never made any dollars? You can pour millions more and it wouldn't make any money. Now that's the kind of things that we're in, you know. And if the money leaves, then what's next? The land. Because the corporation's board of directors can put that land up and use it as a clatter. And if that debt isn't paid, the banks loan the land. That's why the corporations, we shouldn't accept that corporations. We should have done something else. There must be a way, because what we're doing is, as we're saying to ourselves, 10 or 15 years from now, we're no more natives, you know. When Standard Oil of California gets a hold of our stock, and if that's the way we're going to do it, we won't hunt. We heard day after day, we want to hunt, you know. We want to keep that land, hunting. Well, Standard Oil put a damn trespass sign right there, and that's going to be it. So there's a way somehow, that's what I'm saying, somewhere out there to do this, you know, to keep that land if that's important to the natives, you know. There is a way, I believe. And I think it's about time we voice and make one thing come out clear from the Alaska Natives is that we do want to change these things. I think the best people that know is the Native people. The Native people themselves. Whether it be IRA, there's a good protection as long as the federal government would recognize it, you know. They're so wishy-washy right now. They tell us, well, maybe we recognize you, maybe we don't. State of Alaska says, well, we don't recognize you, but with these things we recognize you with. Now, somebody's not telling us right, you know. You know, I sat on your commission one time, and the attorneys, now I know that you're an attorney, but they were telling us we have rights under the Constitution of the United States. These laws, we have them right here, they said. My golly, when they got through telling us how many rights I have, I was flabbergasted, you know. And I still didn't understand it, because they said, well, if I have all those rights, what the hell do I need all this stuff for, you know? And they said, well, you know, Uncle Sam, they change their mind all the time, you know. So what good are their constitutional rights that we have, you know? Until we file a lawsuit to let them stand, you know? We have Supreme Court in the United States that can tell Congress it has to abide by these things, you know? And that's what, and let me forewarn you, my corporation is pretty wealthy compared to a lot of them, because I'm aware of a lot of these village corporations in very bad shape. The money is practically gone. And that when it's gone, let me tell you, you won't have anything. You won't hunt, let me tell you that. So we must do something. We must do something. I thought maybe the corporations were the right machinery, but it isn't. Are we corporate people? Have we ever done it? We've been doing it for 10 years now, but we have subsisted, you know. Maybe the attitude ought to be that we sell the 44 million acres back to the federal government with conditions to under the Constitution of the United States, we'll be protected to hunt, fish, and put up casts, smoke houses. Maybe that's the way to go, you know. That's just a thought, you know. Alaska, state of Alaska, want our land so badly. Federal government, as you and I sit here, have regulations on easements, on campsites, on everything. Maybe we could sell them back to them, you know. Now, maybe this can't be done, you know. Maybe it can be done. But I think these are the things that we as natives ought to start thinking about. Maybe there's a way we could put it in the Constitution, you know, in the state constitution. Because there's only one paragraph in the state constitution dealing with natives, that's all. We made a mistake. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Fredericks. That was a good speech, I thought. It gets better every time. Well, we have some students from the college coming over at 4, but we have a little time if anybody would like to speak. Now. Yes, sir.
I'm Ken Berlin. and I work for the Association of Village Council Presidents as a rights protection specialist. I work with native allotments. Native allotments are trust land that the government gave out to native people for their subsistence purposes. And I understand them pretty well. But I don't work with corporations or corporate lands or ANCSA corporation villages. I hardly ever work with those because I don't really understand them. One of the, I work with native individuals. And one thing I always notice when I'm going out there to do leases, sales, mortgages, is that they don't understand a single thing about all these things with their lands. And you always have to explain things over and over again. And I'm pretty sorry to see that that Akichuk people are not here, you know, because I think they have a pretty strong movement.
Well, we held a hearing at Akichuk last July. We heard from them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We've got that. We understand that.
Mm-hmm. But I can understand what Akichuk is doing. But this whole corporate business, I really don't understand what's going on with it. But I can see what's going on in the villages. They're dividing people up. You know, people in villages are used to be a community effort type people. And this whole corporation structure has broken up their system. And I don't know if these people know how to compete with each other for certain jobs. Like, I've known since 1971, some certain people have held jobs year after year, never changed. And nobody ever questions that because they really don't know how to get the incentive to go for it, you know, like Caucasians. They have high motivational levels, and they have goals that they look for it, that they try to achieve in certain periods of time. That we don't have that. We go by season, and that's the way I am. I'm pretty young. I'm 28. I'm a subsistence man. I work from summertime. This is where I get all my food, and I work. I work year-round, and I'm broke, you know. I don't know how to handle money, but I know how to handle subsistent foods. I can gather enough foods during the summer to last me all through the year, but with money, I just can't do it, not even 2 weeks. On these, on the afterborns after 1971, I don't have any ideas what they're going to do with those kids. I really don't. I don't think they're going to come up with any solutions that are acceptable to anybody. And all these issues, the afterborns, the 1991, all these issues coming up are. They're even breaking up the whole state. You know, the AFN movement is in trouble. I know that for certain. They just came up with this United Tribes of Alaska, and I don't know enough about that for that organization to say anything about it. And Akichuk, they've come out with this Yupik Nation that they're working with. And that's just something little that just came out. But I know that the federal government and the state government, they don't know what to do about that. But What those people are saying in Ankerchak is, the way I understand them, is, you know, we've been doing okay all along. We've been doing okay until we were a corporation, until BLM came in and said and told us that they just gave us this land, this piece of land, and said that you apply for your piece of land in your village. And what really happened was they really mixed up the people, and now they're having problems. And they're trying to do something about it. That's what this whole sovereignty movement is all about in Akichuk. I think what they're trying to say is, to the federal and the state government, is just leave us alone. Just leave us alone and just let us handle our own problems, our own land, and everything will be all right. On another thing that that happened up there is, those guys are always up to something. And I was working one day and I got a call.
This is where, Akichuk?
Yeah. This group of people, they're not from the village. They inherited a piece of a Townsite trustee land, restricted, and they were thinking about selling it. Well, anyway, those guys found out about it, and they complained to our president, and the president called me up and said, take care of it, you know. So I called the people up there, and they told me what was happening, you know. They said, what was going on with this land? Why were they selling the land, you know? So I called BLM about it. Also, I went to see the townsite trustee. And she said I couldn't do anything about it. Neither could they. But what Ankerchak was saying was, see, this person had gone into Ankerchak and built houses and things like that, a store. And these people, she died, and the heirs were going to sell. Well, Ankerchak told them, you can sell the buildings, but you don't own the land. It's ours.
Well, that solved the problem, then, did it?
No. I think it's going to be going into court. I understand they have their own tribal court, tribal judge, and all the works. They have that all set up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think everyone's going to follow that with great interest.
Yeah. But for solutions, I've thought for a long time how we can get out of this angst deal that came upon us, and I haven't come up with an answer up to now, except the only way that these people are going to keep their lands is if the government can put in restrictions or take it back in trust for the people. That's one way they can do it, but the government is not doing it now. And what I've seen in the Code of Federal Regulations is that state of Alaska, Alaska Natives, they cannot purchase land in trust. There's no way, except for Metlakatla and some other village. Can't remember. So they've segregated the state of Alaska and Alaska Natives in their regulations, and we cannot buy any lands in trust. And the Secretary of Interior is not taking any land in trust either. They said they wouldn't. And I've gone through with, I've spoken with David Case, and some other lawyer, I forgot his name, but they assured me that there were laws that pertain to American Indians, that pertain to Alaska Natives, that there was no difference. But nobody doesn't care enough to go into those, to push them through Congress so that we can acquire land or sue the secretary and have him take land interest. But I don't know of any other, I don't know of anybody that has the expertise or the motivation to do that. Akichuk might. They found out, I bet they'd go after that. I don't know.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. Anything else?
Well, I don't think so. Except one question that I have for you is, where is all this report going, and how do we know if it's being utilized by anybody?
Well, the report goes to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and to the World Council of Indigenous People, and they will be submitting it to the United Nations. But in addition, the report will be made public in September. And I said at the beginning of this meeting that I would be writing this report based on what you, that is you and all the other people who've testified, have said. It'll be based on your testimony. And I will be sending it to every village corporation and every tribal council, tribal government, and IRA. And I'll be sending it to you and everybody else who's testified this afternoon, so you will get it in September. And then it's up to you. In other words, if the recommendations I make are recommendations that you think are sound, then you can go to Congress, if that's where you want to go, and say, look, this guy traveled around the bush for a year. Nobody else did. Nobody else went to all these villages, took all this testimony. 1,400 people have testified. Here's what he said. Now, we think you should do that. Now, that will be up to you. You know, it's up to me to take all this testimony and write my report, and then you decide what you're going to do with it. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Sure. Okay.
Since you were out there in the custodian before, listening to the testimony in July and then now, do you see a difference? A different kind of testimony or more?
Well, I've been to Amonik and Tununik. I was out there a year ago. I was in Akiachek in July. And we've been to some of the other villages in the Chilista region, and now here we are in Bethel. I think that everywhere we go in this region, people are concerned about the land and about subsistence. I think that the movement for tribal government is as strong here as it is in any other region. Maybe it's stronger here, but certainly everywhere we go in this region, people keep talking about it. They want to govern their own lives. They want to have more to say about what happens in their villages and on their land. And so we keep running into that, but I don't think anything is I think people are gaining more and more knowledge about the land claim settlement. I found that in the year that has passed since I started out. I think that they don't know the details of the land claim settlement. Nobody does. It's a very complicated statute, and it's one that's been amended, and courts have made decisions about it, so nobody really understands all of its details. But though people may not understand the details of the act, they do have a pretty good idea of what's at stake. They know that the land could be lost. They know that their children were left out of the settlement. They know that the question whether people are going to be able to sell their shares in 1991 is a very important one. They know that if a majority in any corporation sell their shares, they'll lose their corporation and lose their land. And it's that awareness that has given rise, it seems to me, to the movement for tribal governments, because people think if we leave our land in the corporations, we might lose it. If we turn it over to the tribal governments, maybe that's the way to keep it.
So you haven't seen a difference in comments between July and now coming back to this area?
Well, there's a difference in that when you're out in the villages, you hear more about subsistence than you do here in Bethel. You know, that stands to reason. When you're in the Bering Straits region, you hear more about subsistence in Shishmaref than you do in Nome. But still, people here today in Bethel have talked about subsistence. It's important to them, even though they may live here in a big town. But I found out here in Chilista a pretty unified set of ideas about ANCSA. Whether people are in the village corporations, whether they're in tribal governments, they all seem to have the same concerns.
Okay. Well, that's all
I needed. Okay. Well, that was 4 o'clock on the dot.